Chapter 2, Creation, God's Answer to Evolution. By the word of the Lord were the heavens made, and all the host of them by the breath of his mouth, for he spake, and it was done, he commanded, and it stood fast. As the earth came forth from the hand of its maker, it was exceedingly beautiful. The fruitful soil everywhere produced a luxuriant growth of verdure. There were no loathsome swamps nor barren deserts. Graceful shrubs and delicate flowers greeted the eye at every turn. The air was clear and healthful. The entire landscape outvied in beauty the decorated grounds of the proudest palace. After the earth with its teeming animal and vegetable life had been called into existence, man, the crowning work of the Creator, was brought upon the stage of action. God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over all the earth." So God created man in his own image, male and female created he them. Here is clearly set forth the origin of the human race. God created man in his own image. There is no ground for the supposition that man evolved by slow degrees from lower forms of animal or vegetable life. Inspiration traces the origin of our race, not to a line of developing germs, mollusks, and quadrupeds, but to the great Creator. Though formed from the dust, Adam was the son of God. The lower orders of being cannot understand the sovereignty of God, yet they were made capable of loving and serving man. "Thou madest him to have dominion over the works of thy hands, thou hast put all things under his feet, the beasts of the field, the fowl of the air." Christ alone is the express image of the Father, but man was formed in the likeness of God. His nature was in harmony with the will of God, his mind capable of comprehending divine things. His affections were pure, his appetites and passions were under the control of reason. He was holy and happy in bearing the image of God, and in perfect obedience to his will. As man came forth from the hand of his Creator, his countenance glowed with the light of life and joy. Adam's height was much greater than that of men now living. Eve was somewhat less in stature, yet her form was noble and full of beauty. The sinless pair wore no artificial garments, they were clothed with a covering of glory such as the angels wear. The first marriage. After the creation of Adam, God said, "It is not good that the man should be alone, I will make him an helpmeet for him." God gave Adam a companion, an helpmeet for him, one who was fitted to be his companion, and who would be one with him in love and sympathy. Eve was created from a rib taken from the side of Adam. She was not to control him as the head, nor to be trampled under his feet as an inferior, but to stand by his side as an equal, loved and protected by him. She was his second self, showing the close union that should exist in this relation. "For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one." Marriage is honorable. It is one of the two institutions that, after the fall, Adam brought with him beyond the gates of paradise. When the divine principles are recognized and obeyed, marriage is a blessing. It guards the purity and happiness of the race and elevates the physical, the intellectual, and the moral nature. "And the Lord God planted a garden eastward in Eden, and there he put the man whom he had formed. In this garden were trees of every variety, many of them laden with delicious fruit. There were lovely vines, growing upright, their branches drooping under their load of tempting fruit. It was the work of Adam and Eve to train the branches of the vine to form bowers, thus making for themselves a dwelling from living trees covered with foliage and fruit. In the midst of the garden stood the tree of life, surpassing in glory all other trees. Its fruit had the power to perpetuate life. The heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And God saw everything he had made, and, behold, it was very good. No taint of sin or shadow of death marred the fair creation. The morning stars sang together, and all the sons of God shouted for joy. The blessing of the Sabbath. In 6 days the great work of creation had been accomplished, and God rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. And God blessed the seventh day, and sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all his work which God created and made. All was perfect, worthy of its divine author, and he rested, not as one weary, but as well pleased with the fruits of his wisdom and goodness. After resting on the seventh day, God set it apart as a day of rest. Following the example of the Creator, man was to rest upon this sacred day that he might reflect upon God's work of creation, that his heart might be filled with love and reverence for his Maker. The Sabbath was committed to the whole human family, its observance to be a grateful acknowledgement that God was their Creator and rightful sovereign. They were the work of his hands, the subjects of his authority. God saw that a Sabbath was essential for man, even in paradise. He needed to lay aside his own interests for one day of the seven. He needed a Sabbath to remind him of God and to awaken gratitude because all that he enjoyed came from the hand of the Creator. God designs that the Sabbath shall direct the minds of men to his created works. The beauty that clothes the earth is a token of God's love. The everlasting hills, the lofty trees, the opening buds and delicate flowers, all speak to us of God. The Sabbath, pointing to him who made them all, bids men open the book of nature and trace therein the wisdom, power, and love of the Creator. Our first parents, though created innocent and holy, were not placed beyond the possibility of wrongdoing. God made them free moral agents with liberty to yield or to withhold obedience. But before they could be eternally secure, their loyalty must be tested. At the beginning of man's existence, a check was placed upon self-indulgence, the fatal passion that lay at the foundation of Satan's fall. The tree of knowledge was to be a test of the obedience, faith, and love of our first parents. They were forbidden to taste of this, on pain of death. They were to be exposed to the temptations of Satan, but if they endured the trial, they would be placed beyond his power, to enjoy perpetual favor with God. The beautiful Garden of Eden. God placed man under law, a subject of the divine government. God might have created man without the power to transgress, he might have withheld Adam from touching the forbidden fruit, but in that case man would have been a mere automaton. Without freedom of choice, his obedience would have been forced. Such a course would have been contrary to God's plan, unworthy of man as an intelligent being, and would have sustained Satan's charge of God's arbitrary rule. God made man upright, with no bias toward evil. He presented before him the strongest possible inducements to be true. Obedience was the condition of eternal happiness and access to the tree of life. The home of our first parents was to be a pattern for other homes as their children should go forth to occupy the earth. Men in their pride delight in magnificent and costly edifices and glory in the works of their own hands, but God placed Adam in a garden. This was a lesson for all time. True happiness is found not in the indulgence of pride and luxury, but in communion with God through his created works. Pride and ambition are never satisfied, but those who are truly wise will find pleasure in the enjoyment God has placed within the reach of all. To the dwellers in Eden was committed the care of the garden, to dress it and to keep it. God appointed labor as a blessing to man, to occupy his mind, to strengthen his body, and to develop his faculties. In mental and physical activity Adam found one of the highest pleasures of his holy existence. Those who regard work as a curse, attended though it be with weariness and pain, are cherishing an error. The rich often look down upon the working classes, but this is at variance with God's purpose in creating man. Adam was not to be idle. Our Creator, who understands what is for man's happiness, appointed Adam his work. The true joy of life is found only by working men and women. The Creator has prepared no place for stagnating indolence. The holy pair were not only children under the fatherly care of God, but students receiving instruction from the all-wise Creator. They were visited by angels and were granted communion with their Maker with no obscuring veil between. They were full of vigor imparted by the Tree of Life, their intellectual power but little less than that of the angels. The laws of nature were opened to their minds by the infinite Framer and Upholder of all. With every living creature, from the mighty Leviathan among the waters to the insect mote that floats in the sunbeam, Adam was familiar. He had given to each its name, and he was acquainted with the nature and habits of all. On every leaf of the forest, in every shining star, in earth and air and sky, God's name was written. The order and harmony of creation spoke of infinite wisdom and power. So long as they remained loyal to the divine law, they would be constantly gaining new treasures of knowledge, discovering fresh springs of happiness, and obtaining clearer conceptions of the immeasurable unfailing love of God.